verse number 23. Rudranam Shankarash Chasmi. Vitesho Yaksha Rakshasam. Vasunam Pavakash Chasmi. Meru Shikari Namaham. So Rudra Nam Shankarash Chasmi. Rudras are the destructive forces. So we have the, just as we have the creative forces, which is called Brahmaji, the creator, Vishnu, who takes care of us, and then Shankara or the Rudra, who is the destructive, who takes us away. And among the Rudras, I am Shankara, I am Lord Shiva. Now, why do we worship the destructive forces, and especially Lord Shiva? They say he is the Lord of Death. When it's time for us to go, he takes us away. So, you know, one should be afraid of him. Why should one worship him? Because Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says that there are 16 Rudras and the 15 are destructive, but Shankara or Shiva is creative destruction. You say, how can it be creative destruction? We only know one destruction, and that is destructive destruction. You know, like a man, he's angry with the world. I'm mad at everybody. So what does he do? He takes a gun and he goes into McDonald's and shoots 20, 30 people. Why? I am angry, you know. Or he'll go out into the wilderness and just shoot a bird that is hunting. You know, I'll shoot a bird that is flying and they're very proud. I bagged so many quail. Or he'll kill a deer that is innocent deer that has not done anything. So our destruction is destructive destruction. Or in the war, you know, first we have peace. And so we build up everything. And then in the war, we come and destroy. Like when America bombed the whole of Iraq, or, you know, in Vietnam, or when, you know, or anywhere, you know, you see, whenever there is war, and now there is a war happening in Syria, they're just destroying cities. So our destruction is destructive destruction. But Lord Shiva's destruction is creative destruction. Now, how do you say creative? Like there is a beautiful flower, right? And then the flower dies and you say, oh, that's so sad. The poor flower died. Yeah, but the flower died, so the fruit should be born. The fruit can only come when the flower dies. And then the fruit is there and then the fruit perishes. And say, oh, the poor fruit got rotten on the tree and perished and fell to the ground. Yeah, but when the fruit perished, the seed came out. And the seed goes into the ground and creates a new plant. And how does the seed create? The seed has to die. The seed has to die for a new plant to come out. So anything that new has to be created, there has to be certain amount of destruction. It is called transformation. It is called destruction. And then we'll say, but why do people die? You know, people shouldn't die. You know, my dear and near one shouldn't die. My grandfather died, my great-grand. But think about it. If the grandfather and great-grandfather and great-grandfathers were all still alive, there would be no room on earth. And from 7 billion, we would be 20 billion or 30 billion. We would have everybody sitting on top of each other. And there would be no room to walk around. So the destruction is necessary. We will also go, and then we will make way for our children and grandchildren. So there is a constant birth, growth, death, and that is the nature of everything, because everything that is born is going to die. Only way to go beyond this cycle of birth and death is to realize you are that indestructible self. I am that self that is never destroyed. Yes, this body will be destroyed and this mind and intellect, you know, will change, but I am that self. I am that consciousness. So constantly when you understand that, then death has no meaning. You know, for such a person who has understood that I am that Shivoham, I am that Shiva, I am that consciousness, I am that Brahman, then life has no particular attachment and death has no fear for. That's why for these saints, they readily went to their death. You know, they didn't care. Prahlad, that young boy, his father tried to kill him so many times. He was fearless. Mirabai was given poison. Jesus went cheerfully, you know, with that cross. Why? Because they had all realized that we are that infinite self. And you can only kill my body, but you cannot kill me. I was listening to Prabodhji's commentary, and he says that it's not enough to say, I am that. You know, you say that, that's very good. I am that consciousness, and you constantly but you cannot mechanically chant it like a mantra. You cannot say, I am that, I am that, I am that. You won't become that. To become that, you have to start living like that. That means when I say I am that consciousness, then I should not have any particular fascination for the body. I should not spend all my time taking care of the body and acquiring things and beings and clothes and money and house. And yeah, I need, of course, clothes and house and all that. But that should not be my main preoccupation to taking care of the... I take care of the body like I take care of my car. But I should not so much identify with my body that my whole life is spent taking care of the body. I should use the body as an instrument. Same way, my mind, when there are fluctuations in my mind, joys and sorrows, and people praise and criticize, I should always stay stationed in that self and realize that, yeah, the mind, its nature is that one day will be happy, one day will be unhappy. And watch the mind. Okay, the mind today is happy. Okay, tomorrow the mind is agitated right now. Why? Because I'm stuck in traffic and I'm half an hour late for my appointment. But it's okay. You know, there's no point of getting agitated. I'm stuck. What can I do? I missed my plane. You know, the flight was canceled. One way is that you can, you know, curse the airline, curse yourself, curse everybody, the weather. Or he said, okay, you know, it was not meant to be. I couldn't make that flight. I'll go the next flight. So watch the fluctuations of the mind and do not get disturbed. So that is how. And then also constantly with your body you serve. Because the more you serve the world, the more you give, the less is your vasanas, your selfish tendencies. And the more you serve, the less these tendencies are, the closer you come to the self, to the Lord. Because in between me and the Lord are my selfish vasanas, my desires. So by serving Him and with the mind loving God, loving Him, constantly remembering Him, chanting His name, and with the intellect getting the right knowledge that I am that consciousness, reading the scriptures, meeting with Mahatmas and great souls, so when you do that, then you come closer to the self. So that's why he says, among all the destructive forces, I am Shankara. I am the Lord Shiva. And Shankara means Shankaroti iti Shiva. The one that does good. The one that does everything auspicious. And that is true. Remembering the Lord makes everything auspicious. Viteshaha. Yaksha Rakshasam. Viteshaha. Vitesho is of course the sandhi. But Vitesha is the name of Kubera. In our mythology, Puranas, they have the god of wealth is called Kubera, who holds all the wealth. He's the treasurer of the heavens. And all the money he controls. And even Indra, when he needs money to run the heaven, he has to go to Kubera and ask for a loan. And then Kubera gives him a loan with, you know, interest and a mortgage and says, if you don't pay, I'll come and take away your heaven. So that's how he is described. But it is very interesting that Kubera in our scriptures is shown as a very ugly. The description of it is that he has three legs. He's very short. He's extremely fat. He has a very small head. And he only has eight teeth. Eight teeth which are sticking out. He has... out of 24, only 8 teeth left. He has 3 legs. He's fat. He's very short and he's very ugly. And he has a very tiny head. So the idea being that our rishis said that do not be too much attached to wealth, because when you get attached to wealth and hold on to, you become ugly. You become ugly like Kubera, because wealth is something that has to be used and for the service of mankind, because you have been given that by the Lord. Keep what you need and then use some in the service. If you hold on to wealth too much and you say, I need this, I need that, and I want this and I want that, then all you are doing is becoming like Kubera. So that's why they say, do not, that's why he says, among the treasurers, I am Kubera, the Lord says, because he has the most money. So the idea being that anything that is the most, I am. Vasu naam pavakas chasmi. Vasus are the deities. And there used to be eight deities who constitute the eight seasons. Actually, there are six seasons in India. You know, Sharad, Shishira, Vasant, and I don't know, Grishma and all, but there are six seasons. And then there is the joy and sorrow, which make us aware of the seasons. Like when in the spring, I become joyful. In the winter, I may not be so happy. In the summer, blazing summer, I become unhappy. So the joy and sorrow are also two seasons that the mind goes through. You know, just as the seasons, we go through six seasons. So joy and sorrow are also the two seasons. So there are eight vasus. And out of them, I am fire. Fire means, Swamiji in his commentary says, the fire is the mouth. Because fire, when you put anything into it, it consumes it, right? The fire, the more wood you put, the more you can keep on putting grains. And it's not going to say, enough, enough, enough. I have enough wood, enough grains. The more you put, the more the fire will grow when you do the yajna. So the mouth is the source of enjoyment. That anything you enjoy, it is through the mouth. That means mouth not only means the mouth, but when you see something beautiful, you're enjoying through the eyes, or you're listening to some good music, you're enjoying through the ears. But who is the enjoyer inside? The enjoyer inside is the self. So I am the enjoyer that enjoys all the seasons and all the joys and sorrows that are happening. I am the experiencer of that. Meru Shikhari Namaham. Among all the mountains, I am Meru. Now, Meru is not Mount Everest or not the Himalayas. Some people translate it. Meru in our scriptures is a very interesting concept. They describe Meru as a mountain which is mythical, which is not visible, but which is several miles long, because the Mount Everest is only about 5 miles, right? 29,000 feet. But this is huge, many, many miles. And they say that the earth revolves around the axis of the Meru mountain. So our rishis, that many thousand years ago, they knew that there is an axis around which the earth revolves. And they had described all the dvipas, all the continents. They had, even though they had never traveled, sitting in their meditation, they knew all the continents that were on this earth. And this Asia was called Jambudvipa. And then there were other dvipas. So it's all described in our scriptures. And they say all of these rotate around Meru mountain. So that much amount of... So through their meditation, they actually had traveled the whole universe. Some people also describe Meru as the central axis around which the whole Milky Way revolves. You know, because they say that all the heavens... In fact, even in some of the scriptures, it is said that it is the axis around which all the heavens revolve. So the idea being that the Milky Way, as the astronomers tell us, also is revolving. It's not that there is a stationary galaxy called Milky Way. It is constantly moving. So Meru is the axis around which the whole universe evolves. Actually, there are six. Actually, every 2 months, they have a different season. January, February, and then March, April, like that. Yeah, when there is a change, like January, February is one, then March, April is one. I remember four, Grishma, Sharad, Vasant, and Shishir. Grishma is heat, Sharad is cold, Varsha Ritu, and then there is a sixth one. Autumn, but I don't know, baby, what is the Hindi word for it? Patjhad, right. So Patjhad and Varsha. So there are six. Fall, Pankhad. Right. Yeah, so there are six seasons. Basically every 2 months. And then joy and sorrow. Those are the eight seasons. Because our mind goes through these changes, you know, of the seasons.